Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Open Crypto. We have a lot to talk about today, but what I do want to talk about first is my social media. You can find me basically everywhere in the link tree, in my description here of this video. If you look down, you will find my link tree. In that, you'll find me basically on every single platform that is possibly known to humankind. But I'm on Rumble, YouTube, Odyssey, Twitter, Instagram, Patreon, Subscribestar, Twitch, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, and I have so much more to add to this list. But let's get into what's going on with cryptocurrency right now. Looking at the markets, we have a lot to talk about today, but Bitcoin is sitting at around $39,180 as I speak right now, up about 0.74% in the last 24 hours, but it's down about 4.21% in the last 7 days here. So overall, kind of a consolidation period that we're continuing to, you know, remain in here. Of course, doing much better than it was 2 weeks ago. Of course, before the whole Ukraine situation, and especially during the first day of that, crypto took a massive nosedive down about, you know, 16 to 20%. And it's come back since from that kind of point. Ethereum is sitting down about 0.25% right now in the last 24 hours, down to $2,600, down almost 7% in the last week. So, you know, crypto has taken quite a beating, especially with the regular stock market, but we'll get into that as well. Binance Coin is, right now it's actually up 0.5% today, so looking pretty good there, up to 384. It has messed around with this kind of $400 level for a while, and we kind of saw it break below it in the last, you know, week here once again. But looking at XRP, there's a lot of news coming out about XRP, and I kind of refuse to cover it because a lot of it's just hearsay, and a lot of it is just kind of speculation. You know, people crying wolf saying, oh, this judge said that the lawsuit might be over soon. The lawsuit might be over soon. So I'm not exactly too keen on covering XRP news, but when actual news breaks, I will certainly cover it for you guys. But looking at the rest of the market, things are continuing kind of on a downward trend. Of course, there's some, like Waves is doing pretty good today, but, you know, a lot of tokens aren't doing too good. Kind of a general overall negative sentiment today because of what Bitcoin is doing. But looking at some of the top gainers of today, we're seeing Waves is doing pretty good, as I just said. It's up over $20 once again, so all you Waves, Waves holders out there, doing pretty good. Anchor, of course. Interesting kind of move here. I was thinking maybe Anchor Protocol would be one of the gainers, but no, we're seeing actual Anchor itself. Of course, the staking platform do pretty good. Arweave, of course, it's kind of like you know, your cloud storage, but on Solana. It's a lot like Filecoin. That's doing pretty good today. And Yearn Finance is actually up after dropping, and there's kind of news with that. Some of the lead developers of Phantom and Yearn Finance and some other DeFi projects, you know, kind of left that whole ecosystem and they decided to quit. But of course, there's tons of developers for Phantom, tons of developers still working on these DeFi projects. So just because two lead developers leave doesn't mean the entire project is dead. And of course, we saw massive negative price action because of that. But looking at some of the top losers, we're seeing Anchor Protocol come down today. I believe it topped out somewhere around $6, six something in the last couple of weeks here. I don't remember exactly what, but we can look at that in a bit. Now it's down to $4.31 after being at $6 totally. But Anchor Protocol has done absolutely fantastic in the last couple of weeks here, jumping all the way from about $1 to $6, so about a 600% increase. It's still up about 430% in the last couple of months here. But Convex Finance doing not too good as well. This has been kind of a high flyer over the last couple of weeks here, coming back down today. Chili's, of course, is up about 14% in the last week here, and it's taking a consolidation kind of rest period down about 5%. And that's really all I have to talk about regarding the top gainers and losers. But let's look at the actual oscillators, moving averages, everything. Talk about Bitcoin. You know, why is it kind of going in the direction that it is? Let's talk about that. Looking at the daily, indicators here, oscillator sitting at 380, so not a single buy order there. Moving averages 1311 with an overall summary of 1691. So only one buy indicator, that being the Hall moving average, and that is kind of the opposing force when it comes to these. That's usually the one that always has to do, you know, is the opposite and showing us kind of a different picture. And hopefully that kind of, you know, paints a picture in which it sort of leans into it later. Hopefully the Hall moving average is a sort of a a future outlook on what's going on with the market. A lot of people use the Hall moving average to say, hey, we're kind of leaving this sort of bear cycle, moving into a bull cycle. We're leaving this bull cycle, moving into a, you know, bear cycle. So hopefully that's what it's telling us. But the overall market right now is looking extremely negative looking at the daily chart. Let's kind of zoom in or look at a trading view and kind of figure out why this is going on. Right now, currently, as I speak, Bitcoin sits around 39,200 dollars, somewhere in there. And of course, we were kind of bottomed out at around 37,600 earlier this morning, of course, but now we're sitting up above that by about 2,000 points. So things are looking better than last week, at least. Of course, we had that, you know, short-term rally up to 45,000, and we've come back down since, and that was after the whole Ukraine situation. But at least we're not sitting around 34,600. We're sitting well above that at this point. So hopefully we continue to kind of straddle this line of 39,000 for a while. And of course, looking at the stochastic RSI, that will tell us what kind of direction the market is moving in. We are sitting at a 41 right now. Things aren't really continuing to dump, so it's very possible this continues kind of sideways for a while, or perhaps comes back up. Looking at the regular RSI here, sitting at a 45, telling us the market isn't exactly strong, but it isn't exactly weak either. So not much to say there. Looking at the CCI right now, the Commodities Channel Index, telling us that we are a little bit oversold at a negative 24. Not oversold, but we're in the sold category, of course. You know, at coming down from kind of 45,000 to where we're sitting now, that's just going to be generally where it is. But looking at zooming in here on to the four-hour chart, not exactly too much of a different story. A lot more neutral on this. I'm not going to talk, you know, about the specific oscillators, but you know, we're at a 10.97, so a little bit negative there. And then zooming in here on TradingView, let's take a look at the four-hour chart. Things are looking actually pretty okay to me. Of course, we were kind of scraping the bottom of the stochastic RSI line, showing us that we were extremely weak for a while, and we could see that with the price action kind of coming down from 45,000 and kind of dipping to 38, and then finally at our lowest point at 37,600. And then we've, you know, since come back up a little bit. But what's interesting to me is that we were actually at a 30 looking at the regular RSI here, showing us that we were extremely weak, and now we're kind of breaking out of that. So hopefully that continues upwards, and like looking at the CCI, it's showing us on the 4 hour that we are in the bot position. So things are looking a little bit better on the four-hour chart, but I'm not going to use this to do any price predictions or anything like that. Looking at what's going on with the Crypto Fear Greed Index, we're sitting at a 23 right now. If I had to guess right now, this is probably a 26, 25 right now, because this is a lagging indicator that updates every once in a while. Yesterday being a 22 and last week being a 20, so we're doing a little bit better than we were in the last couple of weeks here. But still, we're kind of dropping back into that sort of consolidation period that we were in you know, mid to late January, early February, and then once again in you know, late February. We broke out of it for a couple days here, trying to get some momentum in early March. But now as we move into mid-March, it's kind of dropping back to where it was in January. So that is currently what I am seeing. Looking at DeFi Llama, so they completely changed how they did everything. They added a double count feature, basically saying that some of these the valuations of some of these DeFi projects were basically doubling the total value locked. So as you can see, if I turn this on, it kind of shows you the more recent TVL picture that it was kind of showing us. But now I'm going to update how we do it, basically turn that off, because we don't need to double count the total value locked, because that's ridiculous. But the overall all-time high of all of cryptocurrency locked into DeFi was above, you know, $200 billion or so. It used to be about $250 billion, but since we changed how that is recorded, about $200 billion locked into all of DeFi. We're sitting at about $156 billion, so losing about an eighth of our entire market, you know, basically swept our legs from under, and you know, an eighth of its value was taken out. But right now we're sitting at about $156, $157 billion totally locked into all of DeFi. We're down about 1, almost 2% in the last 24 hours here. Curve dominance, of course, used to be about 9% when we kind of analyzed this before, but now it's sitting at about 11.31%. So the stablecoin markets are, of course, one of the largest markets in all of cryptocurrency, and that, you know, coming out of Curve Finance, of course. But looking at the actual chains right now, so each different individual ecosystem, of course, Ethereum is sitting at 52%. Terra is at about 10%. Binance Smart Chain is about 7%, which is going to be rebranded to BNB Chain soon. You know, Avalanche sitting at about 6%, Phantom, Solana, and so on. And that's all I really have to talk about looking at DeFi. I think things are going to continue forward in terms of total value locked. So that is that. But looking at the Fear Greed Index, looking at the stock market, it's a lot worse than the crypto market. We're sitting at a 13 right now when we're looking at the Fear Greed Index here on CNN Business. Say what you want about CNN Business, but a lot of people use this indicator to show what's going on with the stock market. And let's see what's actually going on here. While the stock market isn't doing too good today, it's down about 1.13% as I speak right now. The Dow, S&P about the same, NASDAQ down 1.5%. And gold's up about 1% today, 19 points there. And oil, of course, is skyrocketing and continuing to go up. I said last Friday that we may see oil prices at about $115 by maybe the end of the weekend. And, you know, it actually hit about $140 on some markets looking at Brent crude. But right now, overall, I mean, the average overall is looking at about $119 per barrel of oil. Up, I would say something like, overall, I think it was like 10 points since Friday, but we can look at the charts here to make it look you know, a little bit easier for us to analyze here. So looking at the monthly chart, of course, we were sitting about $115 on the 4th. So it's up about 5 points on average since then. And Market Watch isn't going to give us an exact kind of showing of what the actual market is. But, of course, Ukraine conflict petrol at fresh record as oil and gas prices soar. This is a BBC News. Oil prices jumped to $139 a barrel, the highest level for almost 14 years, while wholesale gas prices for next day delivery more than doubled. So in the UK, we're seeing, you know, oil prices completely skyrocket. In Europe, energy is, they're seeing an energy crisis right now with the whole ban on the Russian energy situation. And the United States is still buying Russian oil, which is pretty interesting. And, you know, you're seeing a lot of Saudi companies make a lot of money because of this. So you have that situation. $140 is what it hit on some exchanges in Europe. And of course, the overall all-time high of, you know, oil in history was June of 2008 when it hit $180 a barrel, $179 basically, $180 right there. And we're not too far off from that at this point. And we're about $30 off, I would say, looking at some markets. And of course, the average is showing us it's going to be lower because, you know, in the United States and Europe have different prices when it comes to oil. I mean, town to town has different prices. So right now it's sitting at an average of about $120, and we're not too far off from our previous all-time highs, which is quite scary, actually. Looking at AAA gas prices right now, the national average is sitting at about $4 a gallon, $4.06 right now. Yesterday was about $4, so it's gained about 6 points since yesterday. If I had to guess, it's probably more at this point. 1 week ago, we were sitting at $3.61 a gallon, so it's gained about 40 points or 40 cents on you know, on the week. So that's pretty scary. Looking at a month ago average sitting at $3.44, we're actually up about 60 cents in a month. Pretty insane. Some places in California are, you know, posting $7 a gallon, but overall in California, it's about $5. In Texas, of course, it's about $3.72. New York, about $4.26. Midwest is looking pretty good, actually, about $3.70 right now, $3.80 in that range. And of course, the Southeast is, you know, cheaper than average. But looking at what's going on with the actual stock market, Saudi Arabian Oil Company used to be the third most valuable company in the world in terms of market cap. Now it's the second most, as it is up about 20% in the last month here. So if you had invested in oil stocks, you'd be doing pretty good for yourself. And if you're, you know, a Saudi oil tycoon, you are also doing pretty good this month as well. Looking at some of the other Saudi, you know, groups here, Aqua Power looking pretty good. Saudi Basic Industry is doing pretty good as well. So we're seeing, you know, Saudi shares do extremely well here because of the oil prices and in that situation. So take that for what it's worth. Looking at some Yahoo News here, UK on edge for economic collapse over Russian sanctions, warns Tory MP. So now we're seeing a lot of politicians in the West say, okay, maybe we should kind of back off these sanctions here because they want to win re-election. And if they want to win re-election, they have to, you know, try and stop inflation. And, you know, by cutting off Russian oil, that's not exactly, doesn't seem like their prerogative to try and stop inflation. If anything, it seems like they're trying to manipulate the market to make oil companies a lot of money. And people are beginning to realize this, and people aren't as stupid as you would believe and as these politicians would believe. But yes, they are now warning of economic collapse, even though they knew exactly what was going to happen if they decided to, you know, limit Russian imports of oil. Looking at what's going on here, Bitcoin Archive tweets, American Express has joined Visa and MasterCard in suspending operations in Russia. So we're seeing massive, you know, overarching, you know, multinational corporations begin to actually limit uses in foreign countries. Russia, they're basically canceling Russia and taking Russia out of the traditional banking system, and so they're basically having to create their own or go on with China or maybe perhaps use crypto at some point. So we're seeing you can't even use Visa, MasterCard in Russia anymore. So imagine the average Russian citizen, you know, trying to go, you know, spend money at a supermarket and they try and use a Visa or MasterCard and it just doesn't work. And so this is probably why we were seeing massive bank runs in Russia and everything going on with that. So not good for, you know, the average Russian citizen, not good for the world. Binance to focus on crypto payments with new subsidiary Bfinity. So we're seeing Coinbase come out with their card, you know, with Visa. And basically you can use, you know, your Coinbase card and you get 4% cash back on whatever you spend. And now Binance wants to do the exact same thing. But we'll see if they're able to do this in the United States, as obviously Binance is banned in the U.S. They're not banned, but they don't offer services in the U.S. because they don't want to comply with U.S. regulations and everything like that. So maybe around the world we'll see, you know, a Binance card come out and everything with that. So perhaps this might come out and you might be able to use this in Russia. So hopefully this is, you know, geared towards, you know, the Russian economy so that people are actually able to use a card. They could gain a lot of users in, you know, Binance. If Binance is really the only card that is able to be used in, you know, Russia, will, you know, their population begin to actually adopt cryptocurrency? We'll have to see. They are kind of right now. But this is kind of something funny I saw from CoinGecko tweeting out, when Bitcoin is boring, we go for ramen instead. And so this chart basically shows, oh, when people stop caring about Bitcoin, they care a lot more about ramen and the inverse as well. So as you can see, as you know, the price of Bitcoin goes down, more people search for, you know, ramen and everything like that. So I don't know. That's just interesting to me. But looking at documenting Bitcoin here, there are now 400 million addresses holding Bitcoin, more than ever at this point. This is the most that it has ever been in history, and it just keeps increasing over time. And many people kind of attribute this to Bitcoin standing as, you know, possible reserve currency or possible reserve, you know, asset, you know, value. So people basically, you know, invest their, you know, liquidity into Bitcoin, and that just becomes the overall store of value of the world. And so we're seeing right now over 40 million addresses are now holding Bitcoin and basically are not moving them at all. And so that's extremely good news for the network. The network of Bitcoin is stronger than ever. The fundamentals are continuing to get better and better and better over time. And there's nothing that can stop that. You know, China banning Bitcoin, you know, didn't stop it. Still more people in China are holding than ever. Russia, of course, more people are holding Bitcoin there than ever. Europe, South America, everywhere around the world, it is being used everywhere. Of course, El Salvador made it legal tender. And so it's just going to continue moving forward, in my honest opinion. But of course, coming out of Zero Hedge here, Saudi Crown Prince gives Biden the cold shoulder. I do not care what he thinks. So we saw Biden, I believe it was last week sometime, going and trying to talk to these, you know, Saudi oil tycoons and you know, the prince of and the king of Saudi Arabia. I'm going to say, hey, can you please, you know, export more oil? And they're saying, yeah, we're not going to do what you say. You know, we're making record profits here. Why would we listen to you? You basically caused this whole situation with Russia. You overthrew the government of Ukraine in 2014, and Russia didn't like that so much. So eventually Russia said, okay, we're going to intervene here because this is a border nation of ours. It's been, you know, going through this kind of soft civil war for a while. We're going to actually intervene here. And now the United States is, and actually mostly Europe, is trying to cut oil off from Russia and stop buying oil from Russia. And so basically the West has caused this whole situation, and the Saudi prince is saying, yeah, I actually don't care. I'm making record profits. I'm not going to do what you want. So that's interesting there. But overall, looking at the whole inflationary environment of the United States right now, in January, and I've talked about this before, the average price of a house was $325,000, for the average home. And that was in January. But in February, it was about $133,000 for your average home. And now in March, it's about $337,000 for your average home. So on average, the average house is, and I keep using the word average here, because I really want to stress that, you can't really find houses for less than 250 grand anymore, really even less than 300 grand anymore, anywhere around, you know, 40 miles within a city center. You just can't do it. But the average house is increasing by $6,000 per month, which is absolutely insane. The average worker makes about $3,500 per month in the United States. So it's kind of outstripping the average person's labor by about $2,500 a month. So if you work your entire life to try and, this can't happen anymore, but if you try and save up for a down payment on a house, the value of the house will actually outstrip the value of your labor. So what is even the point anymore? And that's the problem with inflation. And, you know, we have seen that in the last 70 years, looking at compensation relative to productivity. Compensation really has not grown at all, basically what people are being paid for their work. But overall, the work is, you know, has basically doubled in, you know, how actually well it's going. Productivity has increased. The amount of product that is produced by the average, you know, work hour is continuing to increase over time, but the relative pay for that work is not increasing, which is a problem. And we are currently seeing that right now with the average price of a house going up faster than what somebody can even make in a single given month. We're continuing to see this trend move forward. Same with the real GDP per capita and the average real wage. As the person, you know, of course they get, you know, a slight raise, you know, per year, maybe something like 4%. The average price of a house goes up about 20%. So you're seeing the real GDP per capita completely skyrocket because, you know, the asset prices continue to inflate, but the average, you know, value of labor doesn't move basically at all since 1970, has completely stagnated. Looking at other metrics here, the income growth from 1917 to 2012, you know, the average worker was continuing to gain in their average, you know, standing in the economy. And since 1971, it has completely flatlined. So I wonder what happened in 1971. You guys probably know, but that's a good question. Looking at what's going on here, I don't know why MSN, sometimes they like change the article on me. I was trying to look for Federal Reserve rates here. Here we go. I think it was this article. Fed knows they will need to gradually normalize rates, says Roger Ferguson. I don't know why he's important, but basically they're saying that the Federal Reserve has to raise rates now. But the problem with that is that our GDP is actually zero. The Atlanta Fed came out a couple of days ago and said that our GDP is actually just sitting at zero. And if our inflation rate is at about 8%, which is probably what it's going to be here in March, 8, maybe 8.5%, looking at what's going on with oil, and they decide to actually raise rates, that's going to cut into the GDP. So not only will we have massive inflation, but we'll actually have a negative GDP number. And at that point, there's really nothing the Federal Reserve can do but continue to print money, which is obviously a huge problem. So what are they going to do? Their first idea was, we're going to just let this inflation run wild. They tried to say it was the whole transitory thing. We knew they were lying, but they were trying to basically cause inflation, and this hurt the average worker. But now that we realize that it's not transitory, they're coming back and saying, oh, okay, we're going to raise rates to 2%. You're going to raise rates to 2% with, you know, inflation rates that in real terms is probably something like 16, maybe even 20%, looking at the average price of, you know, houses, clothes, food, gas, everything. You're going to have to raise rates back to 1980 to what it was at about 20%. And if they decide to raise rates to 20%, you can kiss this economy goodbye. It's completely destroyed. There's nothing left. So they're going to try and raise it to 2%, which will not stop inflation at all. 2% is nothing. You know, Russia just raised their interest rate to 20% to stop inflation. If we were to do that, we are not in the geopolitical position to do that. We are not in the economic position to do that. The United States GDP to debt ratio is something like 180%. And if you look at how much actual interest we have to pay on debt per quarter, it's something like $350 billion. So if they decide to raise interest rates, you know, to 10%, imagine what the actual debt payment would be. It would be completely incredible. But here's really what I want to go over at the end here. 21mcap.com shows us the total number of Bitcoin that will ever exist, and that is 21 million. Now, compare this to dollars, which has an infinite supply. The current amount of Bitcoin in circulation is about 18,976,000. How many are remaining? About 2 million are still remaining and left, basically, to be mined. The percentage of Bitcoin supply that has already been mined is about 90%. So it just has about 10% inflation left. And that is basically all that will ever exist is 21 million. And it's actually deflationary because people lose their coins. You know, some of it's caught up in wallets that will never be seen again. Of course, Satoshi's wallet holds about a million of them, and they'll never be accessed again because nobody knows where or who he is, or maybe he's dead or wherever. So this number is actually significantly lower. The amount of actual Bitcoin in circulation that are, you know, able to be accessed right now is probably something like 12 million to maybe 14 million, if I had to guess, because many of the old wallets that are holding haven't moved in years, 8 years or so. But looking at the Bitcoin remaining, this price is probably already priced in, if I had to guess, because if a company decides that it's going to launch a bunch of new shares, you know, without actually telling the market beforehand, it just dumps them onto the market, well, you're going to have the price of those shares plummet even before they release the new the new shares, right? It's basically a supply-demand situation. The same thing with dollars, right? You got $100 and you say that you're going to put 10 more dollars into circulation, people will begin to value that a lot less before. So people are probably already pricing this in. Most people already just think, oh, 21 million, that's how many will ever exist. Not, there's only 18,900,000 right now. That's usually not how people think about it. But this is quite literally the answer to our problems here. When we're looking at the actual, you know, compensation relative to, you know, GDP, we look at the actual, the amount of economic growth that has been cut out from the middle class. It has to do with the fact that the Federal Reserve is causing inflation. And that really is the key issue here. It's not what specific policy is, you know, the government doing. Do we have a minimum wage law? Do we have this? Do we have that? Do we have socialized medicine? No. It has to do with the fact that they're just printing money for free and stealing money from everybody else, right? Because if you think of it as a pie chart, all the money equals all the stuff. And if you print more money, you don't create more stuff. You just make it so that that money is worth less stuff, right? So if there, I take, there's 100% of the cash in the society, I take 10% of that cash, print it, and give it to somebody. That person who I gave it to now owns 10% of all the stuff, or has the power to, access all that stuff. That's essentially what's happening whenever they print money. They print all this money, they give it to, you know, certain corporations that have dealings with the government, they give it to government workers, and they basically make the average laborer lose a ton of value because of this. And it's a really sad situation, but I think cryptocurrency can fix that. I think many of us think the same thing. So that's really all I have to talk about today. Remember to find me on social media. My link tree is down in the description below, so please check that out. So if you guys like videos like this, like and subscribe down below, and I'll see you guys in the next one. Take care. Bye-bye.